Thank you for having me. My name's Crystal Heggie. I see so many familiar faces, a lot of new faces. Hello?
Yeah, that's better.
Awesome. Thank you. I want to make sure everybody can hear. So my name is Crystal Heggie. It's wonderful to be here this morning with all of you. I see many, many familiar faces, some I haven't seen in years, so that's really exciting. And of course, a lot of new faces as well. I work at the Advocacy Center of Winona. It's an organization in town which was formerly the Women's Resource Center, founded in 1978 to serve women who had been who wanted to leave a violent relationship and protect their children. In 2019, we renamed our organization the Advocacy Center of Winona, removing the gender terminology and being more reflective of all of the clients that we serve, which is all genders and all sexual orientations. In the last year, we have served almost 700 individuals at our organization. So these are individuals seeking services for sexual assault, domestic violence, concerns that they have. We serve the Winona County and surrounding area. So anyone who has ties to our community, people who work in Wisconsin but live in Minnesota, people who vice versa live in Winona or outside of Winona but come here, individuals who have no living connection but they may come back here to visit somebody in college or somebody that they know and have an incident that happens within Winona County. So we, and then also the surrounding area, because a lot of our communities don't have sexual and domestic violence services, and so we'll work with individuals in those communities who don't have them as well. So like I said, we were founded in 1978, and some of the services that we offer are, we want to serve the individual and meet them where they're at. So it could mean a whole number of different things. So if somebody presents themselves with a domestic violence situation or a sexual assault, their self-directed needs may look differently depending on who they are and what stage of that process that they're in. So we always say just give us a call if you know somebody who may need services, because there are a wide range of services. A lot of times it looks like legal advocacy. So while we are not lawyers and we are not counselors, we do provide advocacy for individuals in the legal system, so going to court appearances so they don't have to face their abuser in court, and then we can report back on what happened during those court appearances, and helping them prep for court appearances as well if they need to testify or they need to make a victim statement. We work doing medical advocacy as well, so a lot of times we'll go to the emergency room and assist a individual after a sexual or a domestic assault, advocating for them to the medical provider. So again, we're not doctors, and we have no medical training, but we can advocate for that person's needs while they are in that situation. Oftentimes, these systems can be confusing, and especially in trauma and in crisis, they become even more confusing for individuals to navigate and understanding what their options may be. So that is one of the things that we go and assist with at that time. And other types of crisis intervention. We do a lot of, we have a 24/7 crisis line, and so we respond all day, all night, holidays, weekends, to individuals who may be in crisis. And that may look like finding them a safe place to be because they can't be in their home. It may mean filling up a gas tank at 3 a.m. so that they can drive somewhere to be with their with community that's safe. And a number of other crisis interventions, bringing personal needs, replacing sheets that have been taken for forensic due to a sexual assault. And, you know, so a lot of that financial assistance or repairing doors that have been broken, replacing cell phones, all sorts of you know, financial needs that an individual might have as a result of their sexual or domestic violence. We have, when somebody needs to leave a situation, or they choose to. We have a scattered site safe home, which is our crisis housing. So we hold an apartment in town that we can put individuals in. We also have hotel and motel vouchers that we give. Usually those are short period of time, 2-3 days. And so having the crisis apartment is really important because it really allows us to safety plan with an individual longer and really assist them in their next steps. So finding long-term housing. We don't remove them from our community because the only shelters that we have are in La Crosse and Rochester. And basically when we're relocating people, we're moving them out of the community, their children out of their schools, away from whatever support networks they may have. Sometimes, oftentimes, shelter is the appropriate response for someone. A lot of times also it is not, and so being able to have that crisis apartment within our community allows us to really make a safety plan that it fits the needs of that individual client and their families. So we provide a lot of housing, we do a lot of housing advocacy, working with also landlords and understanding tenants' rights and landlord rights within domestic violence situations. We do some prevention work as well. One of the great programs that we've been doing the last couple years is called Safe Dates. And this is a curriculum, an evidence-based curriculum on healthy relationships. So it really is for 12 to 17-year-olds. It's really for that middle high school. And it teaches individuals how to recognize signs of abuse and the difference between like unhealthy behaviors and abusive behaviors and how to make sure that you're recognizing those, because as youth, we test a lot of those boundaries and recognizing not only in other people, but in themselves, what do you do when you're jealous? People get jealous, what do you do? What is the healthy outcomes for dealing with that? Is it, blowing up somebody's phone because they didn't text you back for 5 hours and being really angry and upset? We go through some of those processes. How do you handle, those types of emotions that will come up inevitably, help in a healthy way? So we've been doing this curriculum both in English and in Spanish. We just finished one at the senior high school through the community ed curriculum. We're going to be doing another one next spring, I believe. And I would love to send out information because we have had such great response from the youth that have taken it. One youth who grew up in a domestic violence household saw that every day, said that she was afraid to be in a relationship. She was 15 at the time, that she was afraid to be in a relationship because she thought a relationship meant that it was violence, that it was harmful, mean words, physical violence. And she was also afraid that she herself would become an abuser, and she didn't want to do that to somebody else. And she didn't even have the language to know that until after taking this curriculum. And she wrote a wonderful testimony to this curriculum. And I think teaching healthy relationship skills is important and builds a healthier community. So I'd love to share more information about that when we have that schedule out. The curriculum is called Safe Dates, if anybody wants to look it up and see how see like their philosophy. One other program that we recently started in the last couple of years is we have a satellite advocate office on Winona State University. So we're able to offer more student-centered services directly to students who are on campus. We have served students at our downtown office. However, we noticed that the barrier of coming down to our office restricts them from reporting and seeking the help and assistance that they may need. And we have seen an increase of our Winona Winona State students since being in that office. And as we get the word out more that we're there to students on campus, I think that's going to go up. These are students that would have, these situations would have happened anyways, and now they're able to seek the support. People always ask, does it happen that often that we need to have an advocate on campus? It happens everywhere. It happens on every campus. The difference is that you know, having somebody on campus, you're going to get those students to have more services. They're going to have a better academic outcome than they would if they did not have services on campus. They did not have somebody who understood the Title IX and could advocate for them during that Title IX process, during the housing process, through their curriculums or their academic curriculum, and, you know, give them those warm handoffs to counseling and other services that are on campus. So we've been really happy to be on campus, and we hope that partnership continues. It is becoming a best practice to have third-party advocacy services that are not entwined in the like as an employee of the university. So if you know people on campus, you know, let them know that we're there. We're in Gildemeister 110. Our office is called Oasis. And where we serve not just the students, but all the community of Winona State University. So those are a couple things that I wanted to highlight. One of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit more about is domestic violence in of itself. And so we talk about domestic violence. We had a wonderful presentation at the university. I don't know if many of you were there. By Raina Alexander. She is an attorney with Standpoint, which is a free legal service throughout Minnesota. Anybody can call and access, ask questions. She was the CEO, now the finance director. And it's a very specific services for sexual and domestic violence, free legal resources. They can't represent people, but they can give legal advice to individuals who may have a situation they don't know. I mean, our office calls them probably every other day. She came and she gave a wonderful talk on domestic violence, and I really felt like she outlined a lot of really good points. So I've cribbed a little bit of it just because I think it's really important to understand, especially with, the Madeleine Kingsbury high-profile public case that has been in the news nationally, probably sorry about that. So when we talk about domestic violence as it relates to relationships, it's broad and complicated and nuanced. And one of the things that I like that Raina did, and I'm not going to go into all of it right now, is highlight the difference between how that is looked at as far in statute and as far as how it looks like in relationships. So statute, what we prosecute, what we think of as orders for protections, what we think of as misdemeanors or felony offenses, is different than what the definition of domestic violence is. So domestic abuse, which is the statute, has very specific criteria for being charged. And domestic violence is a broad relationship category of harmful things that happen through power and control in relationships. So I think it's important, and I'm not going to go into all the nuances of that, but it's important to understand, I think, when we look at relationships, that not everything that is domestic violence is considered domestic abuse statutorily. And the media will simplify all of this, right? It's like we see sort of a sensationalization of how the media looks at it. And so it takes out some of the nuance and the complications that survivors of domestic violence face throughout their whole journey, not just the media sensationalized pieces. And so one of the things that we talk about or we hear a lot is the question of, like, why do people stay, right? Why did she stay? Why did he stay? Why did they stay? And one of the things that Raina did a really great job, I think, of in that talk that we had last month was taking a broader look at relationships in general. Why does anybody stay in a relationship? You remove the violence piece from somebody's relationship, right? We all know people, and we all know people that had been in a relationship longer than they probably should have or are still in relationships that they probably should not be in. Why are individuals staying in relationships at all. And we can come up with 100 reasons, right? We can talk about children, we can talk about religion, we can talk about finances, we can talk about language barriers and green cards, and we can talk about all sorts of reasons why individuals will stay in a relationship. And when those are the reasons, and we you know, talk to people about those reasons, we're like, that makes sense. Of course, if your religion says that it's important to make this work, you know, removing the violence piece, if your religion said it's important to make this work regardless of it being a healthy relationship, we understand. We give them grace. And love, right? We can love people who are unhealthy for us. We can love people even if we know that we're not in relationship with them. And we will do a lot for love inside relationships. You know, like, we love our children and we allow them to say things and do things that we probably wouldn't allow anybody else to say. You know, like, we allow people, the people that we love the most, to have bad days and do things or say things because we love them. We wouldn't put up with that from somebody on the street or a coworker, but we love these people. And so we give them a lot of grace, and that's understandable, and that's how we heal as community too. It is also important to recognize when individuals have these deep emotions that they are complicating reasons for how we navigate our relationships. And so, you know, going back to thinking like, okay, these are good reasons, when we add in components of violence, psychological control, power into those dynamics, it just becomes more complicated and more nuanced than than being an unhealthy relationship. So the root of what makes a situation violent, like a domestic violence situation, is power and control. So it's not the one-off conversation where we maybe said something mean, came back and did some repair work, right? Like, everybody's been in relationship, things get heated sometimes. Domestic violence is about a pattern of control. So it's really looking at, you know, it's not gonna be the first, so somebody's not gonna just show up being physical. Because if they can get the control that they need through other functional methods, by saying mean things and isolating someone from their family and controlling what they wear, what they eat, and some of those aspects of the dynamics, they're not going to do statutorily charged offenses, because the goal is the power and the control. So saying mean things, telling somebody, you know, awful things about themselves isn't statutorily charged out. You're not going to be able to charge them with a crime for that. And it's horrible and awful, and it's still domestic violence. So over a period of time, a pattern of control exists. And like I said, that can be psychological. Financial control is a huge one. Almost everybody that we work with has some kind of financial abuse happening, restricting from finances, restricting from having a job, showing up at their job so that they get fired or have problems with their job, restricting them from paying for things for the kids. Am I getting close? Okay.
We want to leave some time for questions.
Yep, okay. I'm almost done anyways. So there's, I could go on, but there's, so within these dynamics, there's power and control. And so what we do at Advocacy Center of Winona is try to empower them. So that's why the self-directed need is so important. We need to know what they need to feel safe. And that could look like a broad context of things. It may look like going to law enforcement, and it may not. It may look like finding a culturally specific therapist who is also bilingual so that they can have services in their own language. It can look like a whole lot of different things, and it's really important for them to define that because we're giving back that power that has been systematically taken from them for so long. So that's one of the most important core values of our organization. And I was going to go through a whole big testimonial, but I think you can kind of understand. And if you want any more information, I'll share my contact information, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone about our services, our philosophy, and some of the ways that we impact the community. Thank you. Yeah, so we've got a staff of 6 individuals. Not everybody's full-time. It's probably more like 4.75 FTE. And then we have the downtown office, and we have the satellite office on Winona State campus. We do have a lot of volunteers. We have people who come and want advocate trained will take the crisis line and do mobile advocacy. And then we also have, obviously, our board of directors and other individuals who put on events and awareness events and fundraising events and things like that, which I know some of you have been to and supported. So thank you for that. Yeah, so substance use disorder definitely exacerbates incidents of violence. It doesn't cause violence. It doesn't cause power and control needs, but it exacerbates it. And again, you know, when we think about domestic violence as the unhealthy patterns or the patterns of abuse, you can have a lot of unhealthy, like substance use disorder and other types of disorders that cause more prolonged negative interactions in couples that are awful and terrible, may not be completely patterns of control and domestic violence, still awful and terrible. So there's, you know, we work with a lot of individuals in those situations as well, and obviously their safety is just as important. So, like I said, it's complicated and nuanced.
So do you also work with St. Mary's campus and also with Southeast Tech?
So we don't have a satellite office on either of those. We do work with their Title IX, and we have students that go that come to us that need to go through that process or choose to go through that process, but we don't have any satellite offices on those campuses. Thank you.